This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wednesday afternoon, December 1st, 2021. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Ryan Wilson of CBS joins us at 3. We're playing a game at 5 o'clock. We'll be giving away Caps tickets. We've got a plethora of 2-packs for you if you want to go see the Caps. So make sure you're listening at 5 today. Danny, December's the best month of the year.
It's here.
Fact or fiction?
Fiction.
What's better?
October.
Better than December?
Yeah.
You're forgetting about Christmas.
No, I remember Christmas.
You're forgetting about Christmas parties.
No, I remember those.
Forgetting about Christmas movies.
No, I remember those.
You're forgetting about Christmas trees.
Nope. Remember all that stuff.
Okay.
Weather in October is perfect. It's championship time. It's the beginning of a couple seasons. It's title time for baseball. The NFL's in full swing. December.
Playoff push? NFL playoff push?
No, it's pretty good. But again, the weather stinks and annoying Christmas music. Ad nauseum. So much of it. The same two or three movies that everyone pretends are good.
Is this the year, once and for all? How old are your sons?
8 and 3.
8 and 3. Sounds like a really good year to finally take them to go see Santa and tell him what he wants for Christmas.
Well, we're not doing the thing from A Christmas Story, which we have to watch 71 times this holiday season. We'll try it out, where they wait in line for 9 hours and everyone sneezes on each other and we have like snot in our arms from wiping our noses a lot. And then it takes 2 seconds and everyone cries and it's a whole miserable experience, which is pointless and no one should do it. But there is a little thing that's happening that's adjacent to my little guy's preschool, which
right.
We may do a Santa thing.
But do you guys realize Danny has never had his kids go tell Santa what they want? He's never done the photo op with Santa. They've never gone and sat on Santa's lap.
Right, because I've met my children, and I'm aware that it wouldn't go well.
You told me this last year, and it's very—
You couldn't believe it.
It's rare that we'll find something out about the other one, because we've been in the same studio for 20-plus hours a week for years. I was somewhere between befuddled and crestfallen. I just couldn't believe it. To this day, to this second, your kids have never met Santa.
That's right.
Not even the like customary like picture with Santa at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. No, nothing like that. Now, again, everyone's going, oh, that makes sense to do that.
By the way, he digs in. Everyone listening is like, this is crazy. And he thinks he's just so correct.
Yeah, I'm 100% correct. It's the same reason my kids aren't traveling on airplanes with me as four-year-olds. You're selfish. Your screaming child ruins it for everybody. Kid-free flights immediately. That should be happening all over the place. The first airline to do it gets my business exclusively in perpetuity. Subjecting yourself and other people to miserable experiences on purpose is nonsense.
But the entire event is for and about the kids.
I'm aware of that.
You're in line with your kids and with other kids, and so everyone's kind of understanding that there might be someone complaining or whining or crying.
They're miserable. That makes us miserable. Nobody's happy. Who's this really for? My contention, not for the kids. It's for the photo op, for the Christmas card, or for the aunt and uncle to see. We're going to send this picture on the photo stream. It's pointless. We shouldn't be doing it.
The kids don't want to go meet Santa?
No.
They don't want to tell Santa what they want for Christmas?
Maybe they do. They haven't expressed it to me in 8+ years. Neither of them have ever said a word about going to a shopping mall to sit on Santa's lap.
They probably don't know that he's right around the corner at the mall.
And that's just fine.
You should probably let them know.
I'll keep, if it comes up, if they discover it somehow and they say they want to go do it, I'm sure my wife will have some time to do it.
What about you?
What about me?
Will you do it?
No. It's absurd. It's an absurd thing. The idea that, and everybody pretends that it's like, that it's good, it's a nice tradition, and it's fun. Subjecting yourself to abject misery on purpose for and pretending it's for
it's
the kids is
parenting.
Wrong. Yeah. You pick your battles. This is not one to pick.
It's we not do. A battle. They'll
yes,
love it.
They won't. They'll hate it. They'll scream and cry and freak out.
This year.
You're more than welcome to pick them
Can
up.
Can we scoop them?
At your convenience.
Go meet Santa?
Give me a spare 6 hours while you guys wait in line and everybody's coughing and sneezing on each other? Oh, I can't wait for that. That's great. I'll go out and get some coffee.
I got to add a couple of car seats. I don't know how I'm going to get everybody
there.
Well,
the older one's big enough. He's free range. You can put him in the trunk. Whatever.
Is he?
Yeah.
All right, good. Now I only need one more car seat.
Yeah.
So we're not going to break the drought this year, it doesn't sound like. Although you're saying there's some event that's basically coming to you where maybe they'll get to see Santa.
Well, I'm nervous because I'm portly that they're going to ask me to be Santa, which is the thing that's a bridge I'm not ready to cross yet.
They won't. They'll have Santa. The actual Santa will show up.
Well, they're talking about it's a local thing and there's only a handful of people coming. There's going to be a Santa. And there's been some rumors at drop-off that they're going to ask one of the dads to do it. And I know I'm a candidate.
Maybe they'll ask the hot dad. Then you don't have to worry about it.
Well, you know hot dad ain't Santa. They're not going to approach that slickly dressed dreamboat.
Bobby's in Alexandria. Bobby, what's up? You're on Grant and Danny.
All I'm saying, Danny, if we guilted your ass into taking them kids on Halloween trick-or-treat, we're going to guilt your ass to Santa, too.
Oh, that was me. Appreciate you, Bobby.
The kids have always been trick-or-treating. They love that.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Oh, both of our kids were trick-or-treating. I was going to watch the game and go meet them afterwards. But I ended up DVRing the game and we worked it out. But yeah, it's just a different thing when it comes to trying to get your kids to Santa, according to Danny.
Everyone pretends that it's not for some reason. It's so baffling. That's so crazy. Everyone knows that I'm right, but they're just pretending otherwise.
How many things that you do with your children are a nuisance and are exasperating and are frustrating.
Sure, requirements.
And are a lot to deal with.
Yeah, to keep them alive and to get them to school. Those are requirements.
I just mean things that are fun for them. It's not necessarily a great experience to take two whiny kids home to see my parents on Thanksgiving or to take two kids in the car who are going to cry the whole time to a pumpkin patch. They have a fun experience, and then they remember it, and it's a blast for them. That's
sure.
The whole point.
That's why we go pumpkin picking or apple picking or
see
this
Santa.
Thing. Yeah, not fun. Again, sitting on a stranger's lap where they'll freak out, they'll cry and be uncomfortable because I've met my children. I know they won't like this. So I reject the premise. When they're like, it's fun for them. Of course it's fun for them. I sign up for all sorts of crap that's fun for them. That's what I'm there to do.
But why do you draw the line on this one? That's what I don't get.
It's not fun for them. This is all pretend.
So you're saying they will not like it.
They'll hate it, and this is for some grown-up to try to get a photo op. I hate the forced photo op that's not for the kids. It's not for their memories. It's for some grown-up to satisfy some sort of undying need to pretend that this is what you do.
Do your kids write a letter with what they want and send it off to the North Pole?
My oldest did that once.
Okay.
And I think, because my youngest can't write. I mean, he doesn't really know anything. I think he'll try this year to, maybe express
because my point
in some
is
way.
If there is an interest, if there's some knowledge of how this is all working, that's the wheelhouse age where I guarantee it would be cool for him to meet the big guy. And I think he might want to go and tell the big fella in person.
You would think, but you also haven't seen my kids interact with a single person they're meeting for the first time, where it's this anxiety-inducing fear factor thing. And the idea they're going to go sit on some stranger's lap and whisper sweet nothings about Tonka toys and Blippi figurines into his ear is nonsense. There's screaming. There's crying. There's, fine, screw it, we're going home after we wait for an hour and a half.
You don't think they would even make it up to the front?
If they made it up there, it's because I forced them to. And that sounds like fun, right?
Tim's in Stafford on Grant and Danny. What's up, Tim?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that with the Christmas music being absolutely overplayed and such, my objection for that is that, especially in the country radio world, it is those chart numbers are very, very driven by radio airplay. And that's my case against the Christmas music being absolutely overplayed on the radio. So, yeah. And also, what are y'all's thoughts on the RG3 book thing? We can do that later, whatever.
We'll talk about that later, probably, on the show.
What? My guy, Tim, I think he just got flustered.
I think so, too.
He started floundering.
I should have thrown him a lifeline, but I wanted to see where it went. I'm a dick.
And also, sports.
You know what happens with...
What about the Robert Griffin book?
You see, it's the radio plays that determine the number of...
I don't know how we got to the
inline
radio
rotary
and any of that.
Girders.
Ed's in Fairfax on the Fan. Ed, it's December 1st. Didn't really plan on talking about this, but we've stumbled into a somewhat annual tradition now of me trying to convince Danny to take his kids to see Santa and him saying he'll never do it.
Well, Grant, where is Danny? It sounds like you're doing the show with the Grinch, and his heart is shrinking. It, come on, Danny, you got to try it at least once. I'm 66 years old. My daughters are your guys' age. We put those pictures out every Christmas. They get teared up. We get teared up. I know you know your kids, and but you got to give it a shot at least once. It's part of the Christmas experience.
Ed, is he Scrooge or is he the Grinch? Which one is he? Is he Bah humbugging it, or is he yelling at Whoville from the mountain?
I think he's the Scrinch. I think he's both.
The Scrinch is a great
bet. One. That is.
Yeah. I mean, This one thing, I can't wait to go get a Christmas tree with the kids. They're fired up to do that. That's fun. We'll decorate. They're getting way too many gifts because I love that. I love getting things for my kids. I probably shouldn't get as much as I do, but I love doing that because for 7 seconds they're happy before the piece of crap plastic thing gets thrown away and everyone's mad because they didn't get what the other one got and whatever. But I love getting stuff for my kids. It's my favorite thing to do. It's why I work. If I could get away with just being a bum and never not earning a single dollar, I would. But I can't. I have to get stuff for my family. That's why I'm doing everything that I do, okay? This one tradition that everybody thinks is good is not. It sucks. It's stupid. It's a waste of time. And we're signing up for a fight. I avoid things that are anxiety-driving, nonsensical scream fests where one of my kids is probably going to go to the bathroom in his pantaloons. I'm just going to opt out. Just going to opt out. It's like a COVID year. I'm opting out. There's no reason for me to do it.
You played for the Patriots defense in 2020.
Yeah.
You're Ryan Zimmerman and Joe Ross in 2020.
That's us, man.
Not for me, thanks.
Opting right out. Christmas is great.
It's a great rant. It's a good little soliloquy. Mm-hmm. I want you to end it, if you would, with a Bah humbug.
No.
Can you give me a Bah humbug?
No, I refuse to participate, which in and of itself is very that word.
Scrooge-like.
Yeah, it's very Scrooge. What was the word he used?
It's Bah humbug.
Scrinch. You called me?
Scrinchy. All right, so doesn't look like we made a lot of progress. Perhaps the Rouillet boys will not be meeting Santa this year.
We did make some progress, and a lot of listeners heard a lot of really, really smart salient information from old Randy Douillet. And we're going to have more guys are going to have conversations with their wives. Go, you know what, honey? This actually isn't that much fun for the kids. Should we not do it? Progress. Progress.
The kids love it. They're going to have so much fun.
Some kids.
Pretty much all of them.
Many?
Pretty much all of them.
Lots don't.
I want to get into the NFC playoff picture with you, which we'll do in just a minute. Before we get there, though, two things from last night, DC sports-wise, we got to hit on. First of them was the Capitals collapse. Did you watch the third period of their game?
I was at an event last night for my friends at the DC Food Project. 4-1 when I left the restaurant we were at. And I'm going, Florida's good. I know they're reeling a little bit, but that was awesome. What a great game. Good job, Capitals. I get home, 5-4. What the hell happened?
So they entered last night 9-1-1 in their last 11 games, and they had the fewest regulation losses in all the NHL. And the Capitals, buoyed by those facts, after 40 minutes, were pushing a good team around. They were up, as you said, 4-1 going into the final 20. Ilya Samsonov was in net, who was vying to become the first goalie in the league this season through 10 games to not have a regulation loss. Their penalty kill going into that third period was 1-for-1, had killed 28 of 29 opportunities. This is a team that gives up 27 shots a game, one of the hardest teams to get a shot against in the NHL. The Caps have been great. Everything's going swimmingly, tip-top shape. You're up by 3 goals. And then that third period happened. The Panthers got 27 shots in the period.
Mm.
That's how many they give up on average in a game, Washington's defense. The Panthers scored 4 goals. They outshot the Caps 27-2. Danny, I've never seen that in my life.
27-2.
I didn't even know that was possible. Certainly not against a good NHL team, but against any team. I think a bad team getting outshot 27-2 might happen once every 15 years or something like that. They gave up a couple power play goals. They gave up a shorthanded goal. They're the lowest penalized team in the NHL. They took 4 penalties in the last 25 minutes of hockey. A complete and utter collapse.
Fell apart.
Not a huge deal, really, because, as I said, 9-1-1 in their last 11. I kind of give you a mulligan on that. But it was just so startling that it's worth bringing up. I've never quite seen anything like that.
I may have made this memory up. You know how you do that from when you were a little kid and you sort of conflate things, then it becomes warped and you think that was reality? I remember a game, I feel like, when I was little, where the Caps had, the entire team had the flu, and nobody could play, but they still had to play a game that night, and they called up a bunch of kids, and they lost like a million to nothing, and they got outshot like that. That's the only time I can remember something like that happening. I may have even made that up in a dream. Just a profound collapse there. But to your point, you're missing as many guys as they're missing that are such keys to what it is that they do.
Yeah.
Some regression is normal and bound to happen. You just, when it happens like that, it's like, holy crap.
Well, and also just in game.
Yeah,
sports
in-game
are so weird. For two periods, you dictate terms, and then the third period, it looked like they were a collection of guys who'd never played together, who are junior hockey players playing against the best team in the history of the NHL. It was very strange. The Nationals remain very quiet this offseason. Now, they made their biggest addition of the offseason so far last night by acquiring Cesar Hernandez.
Championship.
Let's go, boys. 31, entering his 10th year. Lots of time in the National League East. Spent the first 7 years of his career with the Phillies. He's a switch hitter who hit 232 last season.
What?
Huh? Did have a career high 21 homers, 149 games, got some power. Mostly a second baseman, can play short, can play third, has played some center field. Did win a gold glove at second base in 2020 in Cleveland. So shtick aside, here's what you're getting. Pretty good defensive player, a little bit of power, going to end up starting way more games than we'd like at a premium position defensively.
Oh, that's the answer at one of those spots.
Right. The question is, does he play second? And now they move Luis Garcia to short, and maybe Alcides Escobar is the extra guy, next man up. Do they have one of those guys play third, perhaps, with Garcia playing up the middle with either Escobar or Hernandez, and then Carter Kieboom's the odd man out? It might be that they're choosing between those four guys for the three starters in the infield now.
I think that's what's happening. He's getting 600 at-bats, and he's going to play one of the infield. He'll probably play all over the place, to be honest with you, to get guys some playing time and some looks and at-bats. But I would pencil him in right now if I had to bet on it as your everyday second baseman. I think that's what they're going to do.
I texted somebody in a front office in the major leagues who had to put together a bunch of reports on a lot of these guys that were available. And what he said about Cesar Hernandez, who the Nats just signed, was plays really hard, improved defense over the last few years, sneaky power, knows the zone, not super instinctual, but getting better. Solid everyday rebuild player at this point. Well, this is a rebuilding team.
That's what we're doing.
Welcome, I guess.
Yeah. It's just...
I guess my annoyance is not that you go get him, it's that that's the move so far. Like, if that's the eighth move you make, what an offseason. What a nice little player. What a great little role player on a championship
team. And we'll talk about it in June. What a sneaky signing that Cesar Hernandez thing was.
Exactly.
Instead of the marquee signing to this point.
They non-tendered Wander Suero last night as well. 185 games pitched out of the bullpen over the last 4 years. I know he stunk last year, ERA over 6, but I was surprised by that.
I was too. I think they got a little bit tired of his inconsistency because there are moments where you go, that's it. That, you know, mid-90s cutter and a changeup and a breaking ball, that guy's nasty. And then the next thing you know, he's either walking the yard, getting tattooed. So I think they just kind of got sick of it.
Congratulations to him on his 2.96 ERA in 63 appearances somewhere this year.
You can pretty much chalk that up.
You know where that's happening,
you know,
right?
Maybe against them a few times.
He won't quite be Blake Treinen, who was always, you know, the stuff was just so filthy, but he'll be a part of that reclamation society.
Yeah, he'll go to the Marlins and shove it on them.
They were very patient. They waited for years, and he never quite put it all together, and then he goes somewhere else, and it does happen. It works out that way. All right, let's get to the NFC playoff picture next on Grant and Danny. Washington, you guys know, is in as of right now as the 7 seed. Let's go through some different permutations, look at some tiebreakers, and how things look as it pertains to the playoff chase in the NFC with Washington getting ready to fly out to Vegas later this week. You're listening to G&D on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant, you are listening to The Fan. With a third straight win on Monday night, Washington, for the moment, announced itself a playoff contender. They are, at this second, in the playoff standings. Number 7 seed, 7 get in. So here's the look at the NFC right now, Danny. Arizona's 9-2, still hanging on as the top team in the conference, despite being without Kyler Murray for a month.
And DeAndre Hopkins last week. And they rolled in that game.
Cliff Kingsbury's done a heck of a job.
Yes, he has.
Remember, we started the year talking about him being a hot seat candidate. Didn't like his chances to get off to a fast start because they were in a loaded division. Seattle, L.A., they're the top team in the division. San Francisco fell off. The Rams are looking up.
Best record in the sport. They've been really impressive, man. And it's not, obviously, you know, being able to survive without Kyler Murray, who's just the magic man, doing so many different things for them, running, throwing, just making plays when there's nothing else there. Probably one of the most frustrating guys to play against. It's defensively where they've made more plays than maybe you thought they had in them. That's kind of what's been sustainable.
Colt McCoy's been great twice in his three starts. The middle game, he wasn't that good, and they got
he colted.
Out. But the two other games, he's been awesome. The 2-7 matchup, right now, Washington would be going to Lambeau Field to take on the Green Bay Packers. They just did that. We saw what that looked like. He got outclassed a little bit, but 9-3 Green Bay at this moment would host the number 7 seed, whoever that ends up being. The 6 seed for right now is San Francisco. They'd be playing the 3 seed Bucks. And L.A., the 5 seed, would be taking on the Dallas Cowboys, the 4 seed. But if we turn our attention to the bottom of the standings, let's just assume for a second that Arizona, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Dallas are the 4 division winners. Cardinals come out of the West, Packers take the North, Bucks represent the South, and the Cowboys outlast everyone else in the East. There are 3 wild cards up for grabs. The Rams are free-falling a little bit right now, but they still, I would say from a sheer eye test perspective, look like they have a better resume or in a better spot than San Francisco, Washington, Minnesota, and the rest of the hopefuls. Don't you think?
I do. And I know they've lost 3 straight, and it's fashionable to pile
on. One of those, by the way, by 3 touchdowns to San Fran.
To San Fran. They got mauled a little bit. That wasn't an embarrassing loss to the Packers. The Packers were better than they were, but it's not like they got beat by 31 or something like that, right? They were in that one. Tennessee, I think, pushed them around a little bit. You see the formula. You basically try to run it on them and keep the football and get them off rhythm. But they'll win a couple more games here. They've got Jacksonville. They got a bad Seattle team left in their schedule. I think they've built up enough of a grace period to still get right, win maybe a game that we don't think they're going to win, end up with 10, 11 wins.
I think they're a lock to get into the playoffs. I guess my question is, are we sure they'll be the 5 seed and they don't get overtaken by San Francisco or someone else getting hot?
I think they'll end up there. I still have confidence they'll get right. Again, I know it's hard to look at them after 3 straight losses, including with a bye week, where you think, okay, now let's get right. And they didn't look particularly good against Green Bay, but I still feel like they're going to do that.
I do too. They're going to beat Jacksonville this week, and they'll be 8-4, and I think it'll kind of cure some of their evils and stop the bleeding a little bit. So that brings us to really the crux of the conversation, which is that there are 2 wild card spots available to as many as a half dozen teams. And that's me cutting a couple out that are still very much in the hunt that I just personally don't think are for real. But if we're counting up all of the teams, we'll say that are in the mix for these 6 and 7 seeds. The 49ers, the football team, right now are currently the 6 and the 7. Then you got the teams that are currently out. The Vikings, the Falcons, the Saints, the Eagles. Do you want to include 5 and 7 Carolina?
I think they're trending in the wrong direction.
I do
so
too.
I'm writing them off, and maybe that's irresponsible, but I don't like the look.
Okay, well then that's where we'll draw the line.
Yep.
Because you can't then say the Giants, who are a game worse, are in the mix. Chicago's a game worse. And obviously Seattle, second worst in the conference, which is crazy to think about. 3-8.
Amazing.
Now, we're very pumped about the win on Monday night, as well we should be. Washington just beat a team that's second to last in the conference. Only team worse than the Seahawks right now in the NFC is the Detroit Lions,
who are defeated.
And it took the last 15 seconds and a 2-point conversion play from Kendall Fuller. But you don't need style points. Doesn't matter how you get there. So we go back then to those final 2 playoff spots in the NFC. I think the 49ers are going to get one of them.
They've got a pretty easy schedule by point of comparison.
What do they have left? I'm not even talking about their schedule, which I have heard is soft. I just look at them. And right now, this is exactly what we thought it was going to be when the season started. They are mauling clubs. They can run the ball. They're playing decent defense. They're asking very little of Jimmy Garoppolo, who is not as good as they need him to be. He's not going to get to a Super Bowl this year. That team probably can't win a championship because of its quarterback situation. But I think they can get to certainly 9 wins. That would mean they go 3-3 in their final six,
which is very doable.
I think they could get to 10. That would mean 4-2 the rest of the way.
They're to me most likely in of this sort of group that we're talking about. Obviously, they're in there
now.
So
they're 6-5, and they play who?
That win against the Rams really put them in that right spot. They've won 3 straight games at Seattle, at Cincinnati, probably their toughest
Seattle's
game remaining.
A win. Let's say they lose the Bengals game. That's 7-6.
Falcons.
They'll win that 8-6
at Tennessee. Tennessee's so banged
very
up.
Very winnable.
Who knows what they're going to be in a couple weeks?
Let's give them that win and just see where it gets them. 9-6.
Houston.
10-6.
And then they close with the Rams.
All right, because I gave them a win that, you know, they may not, we'll give them a loss there. They actually could run the table.
10-7. There's no game that's not winnable for them the way that they're playing.
By the way, because of that final week game against L.A., they might be able to catch the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
They're only one game back of the Rams. That would be the 5 spot. Again, the Rams are still in. They would be the 6th seed. So if we really both agree, and if, you know, something crazy could happen, but it seems pretty intuitive, San Francisco's in a great spot.
Yep.
Then everyone else is essentially fighting for 1 seed.
That's right.
How big was that 49ers win over the Vikings this past week?
Massive. Massive, massive, massive in both directions.
Yeah, because Minnesota would be the team in. San Francisco would be chasing. Now they've got a chance to really solidify themselves in the next couple weeks against bad teams. So Washington, the rest of the way, we know they're scheduled by heart at this point.
Right.
They play the Raiders this weekend. Massive game to try to get to 500. But of the games remaining, from a tiebreaker standpoint, the least important probably, just because it's an AFC opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to the end of the year, well, you need as many wins as you can get, obviously. Conference record is going to be the first thing that keeps them in or out in tiebreakers.
That's why they're there in the 7th seed right now, kind of speaking of that. So looking at just the teams around them super quickly. The Rams, pretty challenging schedule remaining for the Rams.
Let's go through it. They're 7-4.
Jaguars this week, so there's your 8-4.
They'll be 8-4.
At Arizona, Seattle.
I think they win that game and split with Arizona, but they could easily lose.
We've got to assume they're if they're getting right. If they're doing this, you know.
Okay, so let's you know what? Let's play it chalk and let's just say they lose to a better team. So 8-5.
And then Seattle, there's your 9th win.
Yep.
Okay. Then it's 3 teams that are fighting for something. At Minnesota, who knows what they'll be at that point. At Baltimore, fighting for number 1 seed. And then San Francisco to close the season, as we talked about.
Let's say they go 2-1. That would get them to 11 wins.
Yep. So they're in. I also think they could be catchable if this free fall kind of continues. So then you look at...
their offense, by the way, has been awful the last few weeks.
Yeah. I mean...
Analytically. They've completely fallen apart.
So you look at Stafford's fantasy day, and you go, well, he threw for 3 touchdowns, 300 yards. What's the problem? If you saw them, you know. It just wasn't right. So now, Minnesota, they've got a pretty easy road up ahead of them.
You think?
Easier. They got the Bears
easier
twice.
Easier than the Rams.
Yeah, they got the Bears twice and Detroit.
So they beat Detroit this weekend. Now, by the way, the Vikings could lose any of these games.
They could Viking it up.
Because they could absolutely beat, like they beat Green Bay a couple weeks ago in Lambeau. They could beat any team in the league this weekend. If they played Tampa or they played Arizona, they may well win that game. They could also lose to Detroit. That is the most Vikings thing possible. So they're 5-6. Let's say they beat Detroit, they're 6-6.
Steelers at home. Now, this Steelers team is not great.
Winnable. They're coming to Minnesota?
Yeah.
That's winnable. That's impossible to predict. I'll say they lose that game. 6-7.
At the Bears.
Win that game 7-7.
Rams. We called it a loss a second ago. Called it a loss. 7-8.
Okay.
At the Packers. L. And then Bears again.
Okay, so the Packers was in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So I got them at 8-9, probably. They're probably out. I mean, if in fact, so we've got San Francisco in. Now Washington has to get to 8-9, and they'd potentially have the tiebreaker.
And so the reason I say for Minnesota their schedule's remaining is easy, there are 3 games where if they show up with the same uniforms on, I feel like they win that game.
That's 8.
That's despite Minnesota being Minnesota.
And we didn't give them any of the games they'd have to steal.
And we didn't give them a single toss-up game.
Like maybe a Packers game where they're resting somebody or whatever.
Yeah, or the Steelers who can't get out of their own way at times.
I just don't think... So the other teams are... The Falcons are 5-6. Maybe it's a short memory thing. I just watched them get shut out by the Patriots. Their offense has been horrific for the most part for the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. They play the Bucs this week. Who's Atlanta have left?
Tampa. At Carolina, and I'm now saying Carolina stinks, so I think they could win that game.
1-1.
At San Fran, I think they lose that one.
1-2.
Detroit.
Win.
W. So what's that? That's 2-2?
Yeah, they're now 7-9.
At the Bills.
Sorry, 7-8. They lose that.
Because Bills will be fighting for something, and then the Saints at home. I think the Saints are trending out, too.
I do, but that's 8-9. So they're even mm-hmm. with Minnesota, and at that point, Vikings probably have the tiebreaker. The Saints are the team that looks gross right now.
Yep.
They play Dallas on Thursday night. They could possibly steal that game because Dallas has a million COVID problems. I still think the Cowboys win. If New Orleans loses to Dallas, they're 5-7. Their free fall continues. What do they have after Dallas?
Jets.
Win.
Bucks.
Loss.
Dolphins. Panthers and Falcons. They could be saved by their schedule.
Oh, wow. They have a really easy schedule.
That's right. So if they somehow get this one on Thursday against Dallas, if they somehow get this one, all of a sudden New Orleans is a threat again. Not because they're good, not because they fixed their issues.
Yeah.
Kamara's coming back, by the way, this week.
If
it looks like he's trending.
If they beat the Cowboys, they got a good chance.
Yeah.
But they have no quarterback.
No, they don't.
Taysom Hill's their quarterback. Last team I want to include in this is Philly. Because you know what I said last week? I predicted that they will make the playoffs last week. I still think it's very possible. Their loss to the Giants was a backbreaker for them.
It set them back.
I expected them to be 6-6. If they were, they would be the 7th team right now. Instead, they're 11th based on that loss. The rest of the way, they play Washington 2 times.
Yep. Jets, Washington twice, Giants, Cowboys last week of the season.
If they beat Washington twice, I don't think that they will. They probably get into the playoffs.
That loss to the Giants is bad.
Oh, it was. That changed their season.
Yeah, it really did. Because they'd ripped off 3 or 4. I mean, they lost to the Chargers, and anybody could have won that game. That could have gone either way. That's not a terrible loss. That's not a bad blemish as they start to find their new identity, where they're this run the dang ball. You know, they're kind of they're a version of what Washington has been doing of late. They're not asking Jalen Hurts to throw the ball a ton. When they get down, they couldn't do it, and it looked gross. But they're basically majoring in running the ball, playing sound defense, and they've been pretty good of late. That Giants loss was gross.
So which two teams do you have in the wild card? I'm going to say the 49ers, and I'm going to go with Washington's got a good shot, man.
I said yesterday, I think Washington gets in.
So you say 49ers football team?
I think it's 49ers and Washington. It's between them and the Saints to me. I have the two best chances.
I'm going to say 49ers. I'm going to hold my nose as I do this. Eagles. That loss this week was huge, but I just think their schedule, they have to basically handle Washington. We'll see if they can.
If they split with Washington, I don't know if the math works for
that's
them.
What I'm saying. They have to sweep Washington.
Yeah. 6-7, 7-6, 6-8. Yeah. They'd have to win both those games. Because they dropped that Giants game, they'd have to win both.
All right, let's pose this question to you guys right now on the Gambit DC listener lines at 800-636-1067. We'll open them up. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Who do you think gets in? We just ran through all the schedules. Who's in the hunt in the wild cards? Actually, some pretty good news for Washington. Super tiebreaker friendly right now with a 5-2 record in their conference, 1-0 in their division. Which two teams get in? That is the question on Grant and Danny.
In the Kareem Hunt.
When they are going through permutations in December, and now it's December 1st, and here we are discussing who's going to get it in the NFC. There are 3 wild cards. Great job by the NFL to add one, because it's already showing that it's going to be a blast for years to come.
This is what they wanted for a long time, is everybody to feel like they're in it for as long as possible.
There are 2 teams right now in the NFC that are out. Seattle at 3-8, and Detroit, who's, according to Ryan, the most elite winless team in the history of the league.
And really, there are only 3 teams in the AFC that are out.
Who are those?
Jets, Texans, Jaguars.
That checks out. Right? Those teams aren't going anywhere.
Like, whatever that number that is, like 75% of the league is in it.
Who's going to get in? That is the question. We just went through the remaining schedules, took a deep dive into the hopefuls. I think San Francisco's a lock for one of the wild cards. To me, there's a better chance they catch the Rams than that they miss out altogether. And I say that knowing Deebo Samuel's going to be out for a couple weeks. I don't think they need him to beat Seattle in Seattle this week. Washington's got as good a shot as anybody at that 7 seed, but I'm going to go with Philly for at least one more week. They have the Jets this week, I think they destroy them. They're 6-7, and things look a little better this time next week for them. Could be wrong, but I called my shot on that last week. I'm not going to abandon that just yet. Let's go to Mark in Largo on G&D. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what's going on? I got the Rams. Can you hear me?
Yeah, buddy.
Okay. I got the Rams. I got the Niners. And the last game, I think, is going to come down to whoever win and get in. But I think I'm going to take Dallas to take that seventh spot. Washington's going to win the division January 2nd.
Wow.
And if Dallas loses tomorrow, Washington will win a division. It'll make it easier for the football team. Let me explain something to you guys, especially you, Grant. And, Grant, pay attention to what I'm about to tell you. The Dallas Cowboys are clearly the most talented team in football. Everybody knows that. But they are mentally the weakest team in football for the last 25 years. Washington went to the playoffs last year on a run, which was weak, but they did it. Now they're going to do it again. And here's the most important thing. They've gone through four quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls, and they've beaten them. And all the Cowboys have is Dak Prescott, and don't get me wrong, he can play. He's good, and he's got talent. But he doesn't scare Washington. And I just think Washington's just a more tougher team than Dallas.
You might
Cowboys
be right.
Cowboys fans may not want to hear that, but Danny, you know what I'm saying is true.
Well, you might be right about toughness. The idea that all Dallas has is Dak Prescott is silly. They got a terrific receiving core. They got two very good running backs, and they got well above average offensive lines. A
couple playmakers on defense, too, in Parsons.
Upper echelon offense and a defensive player of the year candidate in Trayvon Diggs at corner. That having been said, they have been bad lately. Right now, they are super banged up, and they are dealing with a major COVID outbreak. So this is where they're down. I just think they put enough hay in the barn early that in the end, they'll be a game or two better than everybody else. But if Washington sweeps them, they got a chance to catch them, no doubt.
So if they lose tomorrow night, they're 7-5. That's your game and a half back.
That's the key. I think they beat the Saints. If they lose tomorrow night, that'll be the first time that I say they can be caught in this division.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're going to. I think they'll be 8-4 at that point, and that'll make it really, really difficult to start doing the math as you get deeper into December. Let's go to Sean in Upper Marlboro. Sean, who gets in?
I believe the Rams. How you doing, by the way?
Good, buddy.
Come in.
I believe the Rams, which kind of disappointed me. I was hoping they would run away with it and this be their year. But the Rams, Minnesota, and Washington. And I'm going to tell you how Washington's going to do it. If they stay focused this weekend and don't go out in Vegas Saturday night and get crazy, they can beat the Raiders, put them at 6-6. They'll go at least 3-2 in the NFC. We're going to sweep Philly because they can't catch a cold. We'll split with Dallas, and we'll beat the Giants, 9-8. At worst, 8-9.
9-8 would do it. I really believe that.
I think if they get to 9 wins, they're in.
Especially because of how tiebreaker-friendly they would be at that
yep.
point. Right now, this second, they might have the best tiebreaker resume of all the hopefuls, and it would only be better if they're able to get to 9-8, especially if one of those losses is against the Raiders and the rest of those wins are against the
NFL. So if you finish 4-2 and one of those two is this Raiders loss, I think you're in really good shape.
It's just fun to be able to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where you get it out of your system on Wednesday to start the show, and we'll start turning our attention to Las Vegas and game they got to have, and they're going to be underdogs in most of the games they play the rest of the way. They've won 3 straight games, which is great. One of those was against quarterbackless Carolina. One of those was against a broken offense and the second worst team in the NFC, Seattle. But it's still to be able to sit here on December 1st doing this is the dream. And several weeks ago, it didn't look like it was going to become a reality. Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, spins us around the NFL next. We'll start looking ahead to the Raiders matchup at 3:25 on Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.